Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guests for this morning are the founders of In Good Company, Adelie Lancaster and Amy Abrams. Since 2007, their company has been working collaboratively with women business owners in New York City. Currently, they support more than 300 entrepreneurs. Adelie, Amy, and I will be discussing about their life's journey and their new book titled The Big Enough Company, Creating a Business That Works for You. Good morning, ladies. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you two doing this morning?
We're great. Thanks for having us.
Wonderful. Delighted to be here.
Fantastic. I am so excited about your book. Congratulations on your new book. It is a wonderful guide and reference book for entrepreneurs as well as aspiring people who want to be entrepreneurs. You lay everything out. It is so easy to read, and you have lots of detailed information that a lot of people tend to forget because they're so excited about starting their own business and they forget to ask those pertaining important questions.
Thank you.
Let us start by getting to know you two a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment. And Adelie, let's start with you first.
Sure, happy to. So I was born outside of Philadelphia, and I actually live in Philadelphia right now, but probably only for a little bit longer. But I've spent most of my life on the East Coast, sort of as far south as D.C. and as far north as upstate New York. So I haven't, that's sort of been my domain. But I'm an oldest child, and I'm the oldest of three. I have two younger brothers, and I grew up in a very close family. I was always very close with my siblings and very used to taking care of them kind of playing the older sister kind of role. Unfortunately, my father passed away when we were younger, and I think that really helped to, as sad as it was, it really helped to, keep our family unit very close together, which I think has been a really important factor in my life and in my journey. It's been quite informative, obviously. I grew up around Philadelphia, and I went to high school here for most of the time. And then I actually went away to, for my last 2 years, I went away to a boarding school outside of D.C. And I jokingly refer to this time as my time abroad because even though it was only, 2.5 hours from my own house, most of the kids that I was going to school with were from the Deep South. And so this was, it wasn't what I had necessarily expected. And it was a really a huge learning opportunity for me to sort of understand the different cultural norms. And, all of a sudden I was the Yankee and I was only, 2 hours from my home. So that was a very interesting experience. And both that school and the school that I had attended, the grade school I had attended, had been all boys schools, and then at some point they had integrated in women as well. And I say that just because I think that that in and of itself was pretty a pretty powerful influence to me, and I think it's probably no surprise that I have chosen to create a business that focuses on women, just because I was very aware of what it was like to be a woman in a environment that was originally designed for men. So so I've always been a little bit sensitive to that experience. So it's probably no surprise that my professional focus has been women. But then for college, I actually decided to come back up north, and I went to a small school in upstate New York, which was probably a little too small for me, but the academic experience was phenomenal. And there I had the great opportunity to study a lot of different things, including I was really interested in, individual psychology and identity variables, racial identity, how do we see ourselves in the world, and that ended up through my studies doing that, I ended up going to a graduate school program at Columbia that really focused, very specifically on that. And it was a graduate, a counseling psychology program. And so through all these different kinds of experiences and, opportunities to, explore a little bit deeper and think about why do people make the choices that they do. It was sort of no surprise that after my graduate work, I really wanted to work with people, and I really wanted to work with people helping them make the best choices for themselves. And it was, at this point in time that actually, and now I'm stealing some of Amy's story too, but, at this point in time, a mentor, Amy and I had a common mentor, and she introduced me to Amy, and we started working together, and that was 8 years ago. And since then, we have been increasingly focused on working with women entrepreneurs, and then, just entrepreneurs in general. We have several male clients as well, and really focused on helping them to get the most that they can out of their experience. And we've done that in a lot of different ways through our business, through programs and consulting and our shared workspace and, now this book. But we're really, determined for people to get the most out of, the most out of being an entrepreneur. It's a wonderful opportunity. And so that's sort of where I've come from and what I've been focused on.
Fantastic. And how about you, Amy?
Sure. I grew up outside of Chicago. So I'm a Midwesterner, and I also went to college in the University of Wisconsin in Madison. So I was in the Midwest for a good part of the first half of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I also lived abroad in Israel. I first studied there for a year, and then I went back to work there for a year and a half after graduating. And that was definitely a very fortuitous experience, because I was working there at a time when sort of the high-tech field was very explosive. So I was early on in my career exposed to entrepreneurship. I was definitely one of those kids who had lemonade stands and loved working. I loved babysitting. I loved working in stores. I loved the idea that I could make my own money. At the same time, I also, when I was like 8 years old, would tell people that I wanted to be a psychologist because I liked to help people. I'm not entirely sure where I learned the word or if I understood what it meant, but I went around talking about that. And when I worked in Israel, one of the things that I found was so interesting is that I definitely learned one sort of model of entrepreneurship, sort of high growth, raising money, sort of having a quick exit strategy, and that was definitely interesting. I came back to New York, and I worked in recruiting, helping to staff a lot of startup companies. So kind of a lot of my professional experience was supporting entrepreneurs, and I eventually started my own recruiting firm. And that was a really wonderful experience because I learned a lot firsthand about what it feels like to run your own show and what I liked and didn't like. But looking back, I was very isolated. I didn't really know any other entrepreneurs, and there were a lot of challenges that I didn't know how to face. I also sort of didn't have a lot of good models because the companies I was working with were growing fast, and that wasn't something that was interesting to me. What happened was the market really crashed, and a lot of the companies that I was working on behalf of were closing, but all of the candidates that I had placed started to come to me to figure out to do career counseling, and they really wanted to know, now what do I do? And it was something that came very natural to me because I really enjoyed helping people, I really enjoyed sort of giving counsel, but I felt it was important to have more credentials. So I did go back to graduate school and had the opportunity to pursue a master's in counseling psychology. And Adelaide has shared with you, our mutual mentor in graduate school was the one who connected us. And when we first started working together, we were definitely interested in sort of helping people find meaningful work. And for some people, that meant finding a different job. But what we found more and more of, because we were working exclusively with women, was that for so many women, that was doing something on their own. And we were really excited about that opportunity to help many of these women make that transition into entrepreneurship. And the rest, I suppose, is history.
Fantastic. Sounds like you two have the perfect type A personality, and you guys can work very well together in concert. So who actually come up with the idea of starting In Good Company?
It's interesting that you say, I think, in fact, we overlap in some areas in personality, but we actually are very different in other ways, which has really been the strength of our partnership. And we really came up with the idea together. We had, there were different factors that influenced the concept of our co-working community and business learning center, but I would say that what it was is it was a lot about listening, which is really important to do as an entrepreneur. We sort of listened to our clients' needs, and we were a source of referrals and resources, and what so many of our clients were articulating in a variety of different ways was a tremendous sense of isolation. And we really could relate to that, and I could relate to that historically from my past as well. And many of these women were isolated in three ways. One way was that they were really isolated physically from, you know, they thought that when they started their own company that they would, the idea of working from home would be amazing. They would be in their pajamas all day and it would be so wonderful. And, you know, what they quickly found was, oh my God, I'm at home all day in my pajamas and I'm talking to my cat. So there was really this sense of people wanted to have a place to go. You know, you really can't underestimate, you know, having being around people, the energy around people, being able to have a quick chat with someone or go to lunch with someone. You know, people like people. And so we, at the time in New York, now co-working has sort of exploded, but at the time when we started it, people didn't even really know what that word meant. That, there were other co-working spaces around the country, but it wasn't really as prevalent. But we felt that it wasn't just about the space, that there was really a lot of these women also felt a sense of isolation from knowing other women like themselves who had gone out to start a business. So a lot of people had colleagues in their industry.
We may have lost her. I can pick up right where she left off.
Yes, go ahead.
A lot of people had colleagues within their industry, but the typical experience for somebody, for example, we work with a lot of people who call themselves recovering lawyers. You know, these are, you know, folks that are, the law does not work for them anymore. They're unhappy attorneys. And so they know a lot of other, for example, attorneys, but they don't necessarily know a lot of other people who, small business owners who are, you know, doing it on their own. And so this kind of isolation in terms of, you know, I have deep expertise in my area, you know, whatever my professional background is, but not knowing, you know, how do I do my books and what's the best system to do, you know, to use for this kind of resource or that kind of resource, or how do I actually go about getting my own clients, because in my last job, you know, somebody did that for me. So, you know, so as a, you know, as an entrepreneur, as I'm sure you can relate, there's a lot of the running the business of running a business that you need to learn, and so we had seen that people were extremely isolated in that regard, and needed the opportunity to connect with their peers, so they didn't have to reinvent the wheel so often.
That's very true. So, Adelaide, what is the Big Enough Company all about?
Great. Yeah. So the Big Enough Company is really, as you said in the beginning, it's really sort of a guidebook to help entrepreneurs build the best company for themselves. We believe very strongly that one size does not fit all, that there is not one definition of success, and that for you as an entrepreneur to be happy and to be satisfied, which we think is extremely important, that you're going to need to take into account a lot of information about yourself. What do you want? What are your goals? What are your needs? And really sort of craft a specific growth plan or a growth plan that's very specific to you. So the Big Enough Company is really about, looking at the definition of success, kind of saying, you know, what is it that you want to get from being an entrepreneur? And then really specifically showing people how you can, sort of shift or evolve or transform your company to make sure that you're getting as many of those benefits as possible.
It's a very interesting book because your book focuses on realistic and achievable business success without compromising lifestyle. It's sort of a work-life balance, so to speak. And
absolutely.
So what do you mean by big enough?
Yeah, so I think that and your point is really pertinent, I think, especially today. So I think that over the last, 20 years ago, I think that the way people used to conceive of work was quite different. More people were happy or, you know, content. I wouldn't say happy, but they were content with the idea of I'm going to work really hard and in 20 years from now I'm going to get a gold watch, or I'm working for all of these future rewards. And they were willing to make significant, you know, personal compromises or sacrifices in, you know, in order to do so. And, you know, I think that a lot of factors about our culture and society have shifted, and I think that the, you know, the economy has certainly heightened our consumption, you know, consciousness. You know, how much do we really need to be happy? And we've all had to make a lot of significant cutbacks to our own lives and businesses, you know, during the recession. And I think that a lot of us have seen that satisfaction and things, or you know, accumulation of wealth or belongings don't necessarily go hand in hand in that regard. And so, so big enough is really our opportunity to ask people what, you know, challenge them a little bit and say, you know, when it comes to business success, growth for growth's sake is not necessarily, you know, it's not necessarily the way to go. And instead, what you should do is consider what are your goals and what is a company that's big enough to help you achieve them. And really anything beyond that is gratuitous growth. I mean, you're going to end up paying for it somehow, either monetarily or with your, you know, with maybe something that's important to you, you might have to sacrifice. So really, instead of always saying, I'm going to have the biggest company, I'm going to grow as much as possible, we're helping people think about what's big enough.
In reading your book, the thing that I got is that your approach is quite simple in the sense of custom tailoring business to each individual's ability and lifestyle that they want to live. And that's very, very important, because a lot of times you have people thinking so many different ways. And what I look at it is that what you offer is smart growth versus ego growth, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, it's there more and more people are undertaking this idea of smart growth. And, we've seen it in many areas of our economy that, you know, just as big as you can does, you know, at some point implodes or it's not sustainable. And so we really, you know, have been talking to people and introducing this idea of what when you're a small business owner, you know, what thinking about sustainable and smart growth over time, you know, is more likely to get to what you want.
Fantastic. So, Amy, who should read this book?
You know, we really wrote this book for existing entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, and as well as really anybody in this economy who manages their career like a business, which you really need to today. There's really an opportunity for everyone to plug in and to sort of create a definition of what is meaningful to them in work and the kind of work they want to create and participate in, and as well as kind of the role that they want to play, the skills they want to use. So it's pretty broad, but certainly entrepreneurs who are, you know, have been in business anywhere, you know, it could be a business owner who's been in business for 20 years that could definitely, you know, look back and sort of evaluate if their business is meeting their needs, as well as someone who has a dream of doing something in the future. Reading this book could be really, really informative in helping them create, you know, a business that will meet their needs in the future.
Very interesting. How should they read the book?
Well, there's a few different ways that they can read the book, and I really think that depends on the type of person that they are. There are certainly some people who, you know, sit down and read it from start to finish, and I think that that's absolutely a wonderful way to read this book, and you'll get a lot out of it. In writing the book, we try to take into account that people, not everybody is like that. So the first half of the book really focuses on kind of the big questions when thinking about a business. You know, what is it that you want this business to achieve? What are some of your motivations behind creating this business? What is the role you want to play? And what do you want your business to be known for, the larger impact? So those are kind of the big questions, and someone might want to start there. For other people, the second half of the book is more about developing skills or refining skills or making sure that you're using these skills more around sort of everyday satisfaction. So embracing experimentation, learning to say no, utilizing your community. And so these are all things that kind of you can evaluate, am I doing this, or are these areas that I need to develop further so that I can be more satisfied? In addition, we have at the end of many of the chapters stories about entrepreneurs, and there's a lot, I mean, there's stories throughout the whole book about entrepreneurs, but we have sort of longer stories, more in-depth stories, because there's a lot of people that really learn and really are able to digest information by hearing about another business. So sprinkled throughout, we give tons and tons of examples, but then these sort of standalone stories really give an in-depth description of a business owner's experience and something that they've done deliberately. And that's a way that someone can also pick up and sort of skim those stories as well. So I think that there's a lot of different ways to utilize the book. The one thing I would say is that I think it's a great book to pick up, you know, at least once a year, because, you know, it's very difficult when you work for yourself. You don't have someone saying it's time to do, you know, an end of the year evaluation. So you have to sort of create that. So this book may be a wonderful tool for people to sort of check in and sort of evaluate their experience of entrepreneurship and then to tweak it so that it is much more satisfying.
Very true. I read it from two different perspectives. Number one, I am an existing entrepreneur. What am I going to get out of this? And then I realized that there are questions that I need to ask myself now, and then there are questions that I should have asked myself a few years ago, and then there are questions that I never did even know I should have asked myself.
Right.
And then from a perspective of someone who is kind of gung-ho and ready to go out there and be an entrepreneur, the book offers a tremendous amount of help in the sense that you have sort of like a coach right there. So this is what you want to do. Do you have what it takes?
Absolutely.
Yes, it really offers a list of things. And, of course, you have the cheat sheets and so forth to help people. So it would certainly drive me to success.
Your point was interesting in that, you know, one of our motivations in writing the book was to really let entrepreneurs know that it's never too late. It's never too late to make your business work better for you. And if just to your point, if there was a question you didn't ask yourself at the beginning but maybe should have, you know,
right,
you can do it now. And so there's no, you know, we had people read this after being in business for 15 or 20 years, and they were still able to get so much value out of it, you know, despite the fact that they have 20 years of history behind them leading them up to where they are today. And there are plenty of people who had yet to start a business who were saying, thanks for the heads up about all these things that I should be asking myself.
Very true, because those questions are quite poignant. And also, they are not something that, you know, that's old news. This is here and now. This is reality check for you. And most importantly, it is you. Forget about everything else. It is about you. And so that's very important. Let me answer this. What is the number one reason aspiring entrepreneurs fail?
You know, I was thinking a lot about that question because I think that there are a lot of reasons why entrepreneurs fail. And since we've worked with so many, there isn't necessarily one that stands out the most. A lot of times you hear in the news about money, people not being well capitalized in their business from the get-go, and that certainly is the case. What we've seen more frequently is that a lot of people, when they set out to start their business, they may not have done all of the research. They may not have learned as much as they needed to learn, and that could include the cost of running the business, for sure. But it's basically a lack of information, and sometimes that's because they're not connected to other entrepreneurs. They don't know enough about the industry that they're going into, and then therefore when they hit problems, problems come to the surface, they are ill-equipped to deal with those problems, and those problems then, you know, can actually bring the company down. So really, you know, I think a lot of it is about people being very well informed and well connected and having a very clear understanding of what their business will take and a realistic understanding of, you know, actually how to run that in a way that will be successful and sustainable.
Very interesting. Adelie, your book speaks about building your business from inside out. What are the four fundamentals must have for a business to be successful?
Sure. Yeah. So there are four broad areas that we talk about that you need to know at any point in time. And granted, the answers to these may change at different points in time, and that's what makes us as people so interesting. And it accounts for a dynamic life that may change over time. But at any given point in time, it's really, really important for you to know the following four things. And those are, what's in it for you? What is it that you want to get out of your experience of entrepreneurship? leadership. You know, before you even think about what the business is that you're running or anything like that, why would you choose to work for yourself versus working for somebody else? And I think that people are very surprised about how, what kind of variety there is in that answer. Most entrepreneurs think that everybody else starts a business for the same reason that they did. Oh, you know, of course you can't stand being in corporate, or of course you wanted to create something on your own, or of course you want to make a lot of money. And the reasons why people choose to work for themselves are actually quite different, and they have very strong implications for the way that you should structure your business from the start and grow it over time to make sure that you're getting, you know, honoring and getting those benefits. The second area is really, you know, what do you want your business to be known for? There are lots of different similar kinds of businesses, and maybe we'll talk about this later, but similar kinds of businesses who choose to have different legacies or different kinds of, you know, a different reputation, or they want to be known for, you know, a certain, you know, certain aspect of what they do. Some people want to be the biggest, some people want to be the best, some people really want to, you know, affect change within a certain industry. So when you look at the actual business that you're starting, it's very important to know, what is it that I want this business to achieve? And again, that'll have dramatic implications for the way that you choose to structure and grow your business. And the third area is, you know, how do I want to spend my time, really? This is the job that you give yourself. So oftentimes, entrepreneurs, we leave the worst jobs for ourselves. You know, we give away all these great jobs to other people and then, you know, end up not in a role that, you know, leverages our best talents or skills, or not in a role where we're happy and kind of thriving every day. When we talk to entrepreneurs about how they grow their company, the role that they want to play and want to continue playing in the future really influences what direction they take their company. And very often we tell people to grow their company planning for the job they want to have in 5 years from now, which is very different. That will get you a very different company than if you just think about what you are most successful at and do it again and again and again. You're going to end up in very different jobs. You're going to have a very different company. Those are two very different growth strategies. But we think that in order to be, you know, satisfied, you really need to be in a job that is meaningful to you. And then the fourth area is sort of, it looks more broadly at what is this definition of, what is your own personal definition of success? What do you want, you know, what's sort of at the end of the rainbow for you? And that rainbow may be 50 years long, maybe you pass down your company to another generation, you know, or it might be 3 years long, you know, but what, you know, this idea of, you know, what is it at the end of the rainbow that's motivating you and that will make you think, yes, this is what I'm aiming, going for, this is what I set out to achieve. And, you know, some examples of that, some people really wanted the best reputation within their industry. Some people really wanted the best, you know, to be able to have the smallest, most manageable, but highly profitable version of their company. Other people wanted to really, you know, have the biggest version possible. So there's a lot of different ways that you can define that success. But knowing each of those four criteria, and again, they can change over time, but really knowing what those are will help better equip you to make any decision about what direction should I take my business? Is this opportunity worthwhile? What should I say no to? You know, all of those kinds of strategic things that can be very challenging for entrepreneurs, because there is no right answer and there is no one way to do it. So we need these ways to be able to choose from amongst all the different possibilities to identify what's best for us.
I'm about to read some statistics I got from your book. This is very interesting. Out of 100%, 66% of them has 10 or less employees. 20% have no employees at all, and 28% have 1 to 3 employees. This is just quite fascinating. And then, of course, you have 75% of entrepreneurs that you guys are involved with are married or have a domestic partnership, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then the final statistics that I found that's fairly amazing when you talk about age differentiation, 12% are over 55 years old. So anyone can do it. It's never too late. And that comes back to the idea of the next question. Sometimes being bigger is not always better.
Absolutely. Yes, and I think about the, you know, the statistics, you know, quickly, there's a lot of things that were kind of surprising in there. I think that sometimes when people think about women entrepreneurs, they think they may have started the business, you know, that they're funded by somebody else or that they enjoy, you know, being married and are able to have the freedom to start their own business or that they're doing it for the reasons, you know, to have more flexibility around having children. And so what we saw with the women that we had talked to, so although at the time that we interviewed them, 75% were married or in a committed partnership, at the time of starting their business, that was different. And so that we found to be really interesting, how many of how many entrepreneurs are self-supporting and self-sustaining, which just, you know, it's their financial success really matters, you know, really makes a difference. And many, the majority of the women that we interviewed did not have children within 2 years of starting their business. And so this was, you know, not entrepreneurship for them was not necessarily motivated for that at the moment. They may have been thinking about it, you know, in the future. But to the point about bigger not being better, you know, we really don't believe that growth for growth's sake is a good business strategy. I think that it's incredibly misguided, and it sort of puts entrepreneurs in this position where they're like constantly eating up you know, opportunities without a goal or litmus test or any sort of decision making you know, ability to be able to decide, is this really what's right for the business, and is this really what's you know, right for me? And what we've seen is that when people pursue the bigger is always better kind of mentality with growth, is that they that occludes many of their other goals. It really prevents them sometimes from having the job that they want, from getting what they want out of entrepreneurship. Maybe it takes away from the their ability to have autonomy over their time, or it takes away from their creative freedom, which may have been some of their motivations for starting in the first place. And interestingly, we've also interviewed a number of companies, some of them are profiled in the book, where when they grew their business bigger, they didn't make more money. You know, sure, the company had greater revenue overall, but the net profits didn't look that different, and their take-home pay, you know, just couldn't be that different. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of reasons to kind of reevaluate whether, you know, what is the right. I think that we should start by saying, what's the right size for me, rather than, you know, in order to be successful, I need to be big. And, you know, this is important. One of our motivations in writing the book was really to help entrepreneurs see a lot of different models of success rather than the just, you know, bigger is always better. There's tons of examples in, you know, in sort of small business, you know, media and in general media that we idolize all the, you know, lots of companies that are huge but aren't profitable, you know, and that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And you know, I think that it was very frustrating to Amy and I when we would talk to entrepreneurs who, by all accounts, were very successful, but they doubted their own success just because they hadn't, you know, they weren't necessarily enacting the largest version of their business. You know, they only had 5 locations, but maybe they could have 10. And yet they were getting everything from their business that they had wanted, but still weren't sure, does that mean that I'm not successful if I'm not as big as possible? And so we really wanted to, you know, shake that up a bit.
You talk a little bit about financing. And another interesting statistic, 92% of the people you talk to finance it themselves through their own personal savings or business funds that they have put together and so forth. So it's not necessarily that you need to use someone else's funds to get the business startup, because you can start small and eventually just grow it in time.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think, you know, so with that, with the funding statistics specifically, so nearly everybody put in their own money, which is true for almost, I actually was surprised that wasn't higher. I was wondering who the 8% of the people were that weren't having to put in any money at all. But 30% of the businesses that we interviewed were angel-backed or venture-backed in some regard, which is interesting because it just has implications for what their direction and what their growth path may need to be. Yet it was still very important to them to moderate their growth with some of these other variables. So, you know, and that's a disproportionately large percentage of you know, typically in the general population, women who receive that kind of funding is quite small. So we you know, had many more of them represented in our book than the general population.
Interesting. Well, Amy, please share with us the success stories of the three bakeries from your book. I thought they were very interesting stories.
Sure. They were really interesting businesses that we had. It was such a delight to meet them, not to mention that all of them did give us samples, so that didn't hurt, of course. Adelaide had alluded to this a little bit before, sort of talking about your reputation as a company and really what you want your business to be known for. And the three bakeries that we interviewed, sort of juxtaposing them next to one another, was an interesting way to demonstrate to people how different a business purpose can be and how much that impacts how you grow your company and you think about growth. So I'll tell you about the three of them. The first one is we interviewed Trish Carter, who was the her title is the Chief Deer at Dancing Deer Bakery, and they have these incredible treats that you can find at Whole Foods and Williams and Sonoma, and really high quality, beautiful packaged treats. She has a wholesale business. But what was very important to Trish and as she scaled her business was she wanted her business to be an exceptional place to work. That was what she wanted. In addition to these delicious treats, that was a very important purpose for her. And so she invested a lot of energy in keeping the corporate culture something that was really a high-quality experience for her workers. And in fact, when she moved to a larger location, when they needed a larger bakery, she kept it in Boston, and she wanted to make sure that it was very close to public transportation so that it wouldn't inconvenience any of her workers, so it would be easily accessible. So really making big decisions about the company based on the employees and what will be a good employee experience. And then there's Pat Helding, who she runs Fatwitch, and it's a brownie company here in Manhattan, and delicious treats. And she is primarily a retailer, her business purpose, in addition to making delicious treats, was that she really wanted her business to be an incubator for her creativity. She wanted to be known as sort of a creative force, and mm-hmm. that brownies were one of the creations that she had made. When she thought about growth in terms of her business, instead of replicating and setting up shops all over New York or the States for that. Which she could have done, she said, you know what, that's not going to be very interesting to me, just doing the same thing over and over again. Instead, she was like, I would like this to be a platform for me to incubate other ideas. So she has done some licensing in Japan. She has a wonderful cookbook. She has tons of adorable branded products, T-shirts and aprons. And she also created what we love is an entrepreneurship book for teenagers. Mm-hmm. And so she really has used her business, and what she's known for is just such a creative place for her to have all of these wonderful ideas, in addition to these incredible brownies that I hope you have the opportunity to have. And then the third bakery that we interviewed was the founder of this is Erin McKenna, and she runs Baby Cakes NYC. And she has created all of these allergy-free desserts. And her business purpose was really to change the way we think of allergy-free desserts. She had a lot of food allergies, and she could never indulge in the birthday cakes and all these other things. And, when she would go look for treats, she'd find them in a dusty corner of a health food store, and they weren't packaged beautifully. And she thought, wait a minute, there's lots of other people like me. We deserve to have beautiful treats as well. So she created this entire bakery, and she has a retail location, and she also wholesales, where it's a beautiful experience. Everything is thought of, beautiful counters, very creative, and because she wants to change the way that we think about allergy-free desserts, she has really taken an approach to growth by spending a lot of time in the media. She's a real celebrity in sort of the foodie arena, and she's able to get out her message. And so when you think of her company and you think of her brand, you really are able to understand that her business purpose is really central to everything that she does. So, sort of having these three companies together, and particularly in this section of the book, is really a way for people to, plug into what is my business purpose? What do I want to be known for? And how, and it's very easy to relate then, like how that can be very different from some of your competitors. And, you know, using that information and making sure that you broadcast that information can be very valuable, as well as it's incredibly valuable to how you make decisions around growth.
Very true. When I hear the story, and the reason why I picked the three women you just described to us about this, their success and so forth, and knowing that how they're passionate about what they want to do and how they started out, especially the last one, about something that it affected her personally that she was able to turn it into a very successful business. This is what I came up with. A career is a hobby that you do and you get paid for it. And, of course, in this case, get paid very well.
In the best case scenario, yes.
And it will happen because of the passion that you put behind the hobby that you're doing, because you have to have that passion in terms of wanting to help others as well. And that's what has happened with the three stories that you had mentioned just now. And that's the fascinating part about it. Why did you guys chose to interview the 100 or so entrepreneurs?
Great question. First of all, it was a lot of fun. And it was really fascinating. But we felt it was really important to really showcase many different types of businesses in terms of industry, as well as the way that people were making decisions. And we, you know, when we selected the women that we interviewed, a lot of them had a style of entrepreneurship that we found to be very interesting. Mm-hmm. And they may have been really well known in their field, but they weren't always known outside of their field. And so we wanted to, in addition to it being very diverse, we wanted people to have more access to these incredible business owners. You know, I think Adelaide was speaking about it before. A lot of times when you turn on the news, it's stories about like giant companies, and it's not always so accessible. And so we really wanted to have relatable stories of sort of these unsung heroes that are doing really creating really amazing businesses and making really smart choices, and you know, really be able to have people have access to that so that it would relate to them. And like I was saying before, I think for many people, you know, they have trouble articulating their challenge or what's not totally right or what could be better. But when they read about it through somebody else's experience, they sort of have that aha moment. So we really hoped that, you know, by choosing these 100 fabulous entrepreneurs, that people would find one, two, if not 20, different entrepreneur stories that resonated with them.
Adelaide, when do we as entrepreneurs get in our own way of success?
All the time, actually. I think we do this quite a bit, and I think that just in general, this is one of the biggest challenges to being an entrepreneur, is that you don't have a manager, you don't have built-in performance reviews, you don't have all of these different kinds of mechanisms to help you improve, and so the it is your job to regulate yourself and to improve yourself and to be looking for, you know, noticing your blind spots and looking for opportunities for development. I think that the largest kind of category or broadest way that we that we get into trouble as a group tends to be when we follow instead of lead. So when we are thinking about our business and we're wondering what step, where to go next, or what, you know, what's the right path for us. When we follow other things, so that could be, for example, maybe all client requests. You know, now you have clients asking you to do this kind of work because they love the stuff that you've already done, and you say yes, and you follow you follow your clients, or you follow your customers, or when there's a business fad and we follow a business fad, or we follow the money instead of what we want to do. You know, so I think that there's a lot of opportunities where we choose, because we don't know what to do, to follow something because that, you know, an answer is better than no answer. And quite often what we do is we follow other people's definitions of success. So somebody will say, we'll receive advice that, you know, you should do this with your business, or, have you heard of this business? They're very successful. And then we look to replicate that, or we follow that advice or follow that model. While it's harder to create your own path or blaze your own trail, we get in our way less when we focus on leading and we focus on the things that we've talked about and, you know, what's important to us and what do we want, what do we want to be known for, and create a path from there. But I think it's very tempting when you're in times of uncertainty to follow an answer and, you know, that we end up just getting tangled and getting in our own way when we do that.
Very interesting look at it. I mean, those are the people that actually needs to find a coach in some ways, don't they?
Absolutely, absolutely, right? Because, you know, I think that what coaches help to do, that, you know, the profession in general, is they help to hold that mirror up and they help to help, you know, kind of force you to ask the tough questions and force you to analyze your decisions and force you to look at why are you choosing to do this, and if you're just choosing to do it because X, Y, and Z, and is that really going to bring you what you want? And we recommend that people work with coaches all the time, especially because, I think no matter how self-aware you are, you know, as an entrepreneur, it's almost your job to continually cultivate your self-awareness. But regardless of how self-aware you are, when you're working by yourself, even if you have a lot of employees, but you're the boss, you know, and there is a certain degree of isolation that always comes with that position, which is why you have to work hard to create a community and that kind of thing. But when you're in that position, you're always going to have blind spots. You know, you have a particular slant or way that you look at things or the way that you see the world, and it's very helpful to have somebody mm-hmm. who can spot patterns over time and help you think about your decisions, you know, more critically. It can be a very, very powerful tool for entrepreneurs.
Very good. Amy, your book also speaks about the many benefits of a community of peers can provide. So what are some of the benefits that
Absolutely.
Can someone get?
Yeah, we're big fans of having a community. That's for sure. You know, first and foremost, you know, as an entrepreneur, when you're doing, especially if you're doing things alone, you know, a lot of times you just need information, and people can spend so much time sort of reinventing the wheel, looking for that information, when if they had, you know, a community that they could call on, whether it's shooting an email and, you know, sort of saying, who's the best this for that, you know, oftentimes people have wonderful resources, wonderful information at their fingertips that they can share, and it's a way to avoid spending a lot of time looking for something that other people have. A community can also serve as a wonderful reality check. I mean, sometimes you're having a challenge with your clients, or you're thinking about offering a new product or a new service, and you think it's this most brilliant idea. And often when you're sort of surrounded by other business owners, they may be able to sort of look at things with a different perspective, fresh eyes, ask you a lot of questions, and sort of give you a reality check about how to think about a problem or a new idea. And they, for sure, a community provides a tremendous amount of support. There's so much support in what you do. Sometimes that's just that you can keep going. Sometimes that if it's, you know, if it's an issue, if it's around something that you're looking more to have support in the way of feedback. Mm-hmm. Then there's the whole other side to being connected to a community, which is there's oftentimes wonderful opportunities to collaborate. Someone may have a service or a product or something in their business that would really complement your business, and together you may have a stronger offering. So that's wonderful, the opportunity to collaborate, as well as you can get business from being connected to a community. We see so many of the women in our community really be, you know, developing business leads from one another and from one another networks. So that's also incredible. And, you know, finally, I would say that differentiation, you know, a lot of times people are nervous to sort of connect to other people that do something similar to them because they're sort of, they see them as competitors. And we would, you know, argue that it's really important to know people who do what you do and be connected to a community, in addition of entrepreneurs, but to be connected to a community in your industry, because people may do what you do, but they may have a different type of client that they like to work with. Mm-hmm. There's some way that you differentiate yourselves, and that can be a wonderful referral source in the future. You may have someone that calls you that wants to work with you, and you don't want to work with them, and then you have a colleague that's no longer a competitor, that's a colleague that you can refer business to, and vice versa, they can refer to you too. So really being connected to communities, and I say that because I think oftentimes people need more than one, mm-hmm. is really important to, you know, really help grow a business and enjoy a business that you run.
Fantastic. Adelie, where can someone go to buy your book and get more information about your company and keep up with the latest happenings?
Sure. Probably the best place to go is the book website, which is integrated into our company website as well. So it's sort of one place, one-stop shopping. And it's the URL is thebigenoughcompany.com. And great ways to connect to us. We have a very vibrant Facebook group presence or Facebook page presence, and we're very active on Twitter. So I can give that information as well, because we love to hear from people and you know, interact quite a bit with everyone. So the Facebook is facebook.com/ingoodcompanyworkplaces, and our Twitter handle is ingoodcmpny. So it's company without the O and the A, and we really welcome questions and feedback and interaction.
By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you ladies have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
I would be happy to. So when I was thinking about your philosophy and your question, the thing that really sticks out to me that I think is so true for me, both professionally and personally, is that the journey is as precious as the destination. And I think that a lot of us get caught up in where are we going and are willing to sacrifice our our daily satisfaction and kind of get on the treadmill or get a part of the rat race. And you know, it's really not about achieving something necessarily in the future. It's great to have goals, and it's great to be going in a certain direction and to know where that is. But you have to enjoy the journey. And if you don't enjoy the journey, then the destination is just never going to be rewarding. So that would be my recipe for living.
Fabulous. How about you, Amy?
I think my recipe for living is really, create the life you want to live. I really believe that we have so much control over how we want to experience our life professionally, personally, and we have so many opportunities if things aren't working to make changes and really to take ownership of that, to really and be excited by that opportunity that we really can create meaningful work, create lots of activities outside of work that really bring us joy and make us happy and use our talents. And so I think it really resonates with me when I think about how I want to create my life, how I have to date, in making sure that it's the one that I the train I want to get on, so to speak.
Interesting. So this is a follow-up question for you. How has writing this book impacted you personally?
I think this book has been a really interesting experience. I personally do not love writing as much as Adelaide does. She's very good at it, and she's really enjoys the process. And I think it's been a really interesting experience because I've had to use some skills that don't come so naturally to me, and I've certainly grown in that respect. But it is certainly a good reminder to me personally that I need to spend the majority of my time doing things that actually do energize me and that do come more naturally to me. So, and I can really relate to other business owners. Sometimes in your business, a lot of the work is not necessarily tapping into what you do best, but that's why it's so important to be aware of that and figure out a way that you can get back to that place. So I think that experience has been really, I'm taking our own advice.
Wonderful. How about you, Adelaide? How has writing this book impacted you personally?
So I was going to say something similar in that, we had our in order to be able to write this book, we had to get our business to a place where it was very stable, because writing a book takes a tremendous amount of time and energy. And so, we had gotten our business is in a wonderful place. It's successful. It's stable. It's incredibly rewarding. But we hadn't been in this position of the very steep learning curve in a while. And so, I think that writing the book has been, as Amy said, a great opportunity to take our own advice. I feel like it really made us walk the walk. So, particularly with You know, really staying focused on what was our goal for writing the book. Why did we want to do this? Why was this a worthwhile opportunity for us to pursue? What will we consider a success from this process? You know, and how might that be different from other people's definition of success? You know, what should we say no to, especially when you're have way more work than you can ever possibly accomplish? You know, realistically, you know, how can we experiment with different things when the answers are unknown? So we were really in a position in the last year and a half of very heavily focusing on the things that we talk about, and it was great to have that sort of at hand if you could, you know, when we could separate ourselves from the actual writing and read it as a reader and say, like, oh, okay, I'm going to, you know, I think I've said this before, so I think I should probably, you know, abide by it. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I feel like it was a really wonderful opportunity to reacquaint myself with a lot of those lessons and really find out where I still have tremendous areas of improvement that need attention. So, you know, but I think that's part of what we love about our job is that we really feel like we're in the thick of it with all of the people that we talk to and interview and work with. We can relate so profoundly to the challenges of entrepreneurship and to the opportunity as well.
Wonderful. Any final thoughts on the Big Enough Company?
I mean, I think that it's a really, we believe that entrepreneurship is just this incredible opportunity for you to kind of create work on your own terms. And I think that for those people out there that subscribe to that already or who aspire to that in the future, I think that the book is a wonderful tool to help you achieve that. And I really wish everyone a lot of luck, and I think everyone deserves to have meaningful work on their own terms. And I just love to hear about when people are able to successfully create that. So please keep in touch and share your stories with us.
And what can we expect from you all in the next coming few months?
Well, we're going to be talking a lot about the book, and we're going to be going around and speaking with entrepreneurs and hearing their stories and sharing our perspective. And you can sort of find us in different locations where we'll be speaking. We're pretty active via social media. So just lots of points of engagement to just connect with a broader audience of entrepreneurs that to date have often said that they didn't feel that they were necessarily spoken to. And so hopefully our message will really resonate and there'll be, you know, a larger community around the types of ideas that we're talking about.
Please share with us your website again and the rest of the social media information that you have.
Sure. So the best place to find us on the web is thebigenoughcompany.com, and our Facebook is facebook.com/ingoodcompanyworkplaces, plural, and our Twitter handle is ingoodcmpny, so it's In Good Company without the O or the A.
Wonderful. Ladies, thank you for the great recipes for living that you have shared earlier and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be award-winning children's book author Judy Snyder and her sister Joan Dicknell. They have recently co-authored a new children's book titled I Love You, Be Careful. Joan, Judy, and I will be discussing about their life's work in the children's book industry and their new book. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. Adelie, Amy, thank you again, and have a great day.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.